Welcome to eHealth Learning, inspiring professionals worldwide.
So we are live. Welcome, Jan Trawartha, Daniel Lawrence, and Julian Baker. Jan is the founder and the director of the British Fascial Symposium. The British Fascial Symposium.
Fascia.
Yeah, not fascial.
So Jan is the director and founder of the British Fascia Symposium, which I went to 2 years ago. I saw Julian in passing. He was whisking about, being very busy doing things, but we've not met properly. But it's a pleasure to have you tonight, Julian.
Nice to see you, Julian.
Very strange to say Julian.
You can call me Jules if it's going to get confusing.
That's what I'm called.
Are you J-U-L-E-S or J-O-O-L-S?
J-U-L-E-S.
Oh, I go with double O, so we're good.
Oh, no confusion at all then.
Absolutely not whatsoever.
We'll be fine. So, and Daniel Lawrence, I've newly discovered about your work a little bit from Jan, and I've had a little read, and I've got some questions for you, which I think the people tonight will be interested to hear. So welcome, Daniel. So we were talking earlier, Jan and I came to the British Fascial Symposium with eHealth Learning and John Wilkes 2 years ago. And we've got the next one coming up in May. What are the dates, Jan?
12th and 13th of May.
And you've got 12th and 13th of May. And where are you hosting it this year?
It's going to be at the St. John's Hotel in Solihull, which is right near Birmingham. Really accessible, easy road, rail and air links. So, lovely hotel. And we've got a pre-conference day the day before on biotin sequity. So it's effectively up to 3 days of just fascia and biotin sequity.
Brilliant. And I was at the biotin sequity pre-conference days 2 years ago. And it's going to be Joanne Averson and John Sharkey again doing that day.
John Sharkey runs it from NTC Ireland. And then he has an array of speakers. And Joanne Averson is one of the speakers, yes.
Lovely. Yes. And is that, am I right in saying you're going to be speaking about scars at that pre-conference? Yeah.
Yes, I am. Yes, I'm talking about the effects of scars on and adhesions on the body.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Just one of quite a few speakers.
Great. And Julian, which part of the, where are you taking part and what are you offering at this year?
I'm doing what Jan tells me to do, basically. That's my role in this thing.
That'll make a change, Julian.
He bosses me about. She says jump, and I ask how high on the way up. That's pretty much how it works. I don't really know this year, actually. I think I'm hosting a session, and I'm running a. I got involved in a company last year, with a tool which I think is a fascial plasticity tool called Gravity. So I'm going to be talking about that. I'm going to run a workshop with that, and we're going to be lying on gravity and being quiet, which is my idea of a perfect workshop. And sort of listening to what everybody else is talking about, really.
Great. So I think everybody said in the poll that they would like to understand more about linking fascia, the fascial science and the wonderful research and all the books that are coming out. Julian does dissection work and specifically highlighting the importance of fascia, right? In cadaver work for body workers and other therapist.
Yeah, I'm trying to I'm trying to get people to understand it and define it and sort of get a better understanding of what it is, what you can do with it, what you can't do with it, what the difference of this bit of connective tissue is to any other bit of connective tissue, and also to talk about some of the words that we use and the phrases that we use and sort of what we think we might be doing when we put our hands on people.
Wonderful. Great. So yeah, I think this is one of the benefits of going to something, and this is the pinnacle of the fascial calendar for the UK, is Jan's BFS, and lots of therapists going to honestly reevaluate their practice in light of the latest information on fascia, because it's through to a cellular level, and every single muscle fiber and spindle is wrapped in it, isn't it, Julian?
Which one?
Everything. It goes everywhere.
Down to a cellular level, no, but every muscle and fibre is wrapped in it, yes.
Ah, I thought the exoskeleton and some of the components that help a cell stand in gravity are deemed.
In that terms of a cellular level, yeah, there is a structure. There is a kind of connective tissue. The cytoskeleton is what you would consider a skeleton, but to call it fascia, I think is really extending what we might call fascia, and I think it could be misleading in that respect. Yeah. I just want to say that as far as the BFS is concerned, when Jan first talked about it to me several years ago, and I said yes, absolutely, as I always do to everything. The thing that I wanted to be sure of was that having gone to lots of fascia research congresses, which are amazing. But I don't know if anybody else has the same experience. I've sort of sat there and understood about, 90% of what's, about 10% of what's being said. I spoke to Robert Schleip and he said, yeah, as much as that. Wow, I understand about 5%. So that's coming from Robert. The thing about the British Fascia Symposium is it's very, very therapist-based. So when Jan and I and Susan sit down and look for speakers, we want people that are going to be speaking in a way that's going to extend your practice. It's not just lots of theory about fascia and the science of fascia, which can be very dry and very difficult to get hold of. It's stuff that is going to enhance your practice. It's stuff that's going to inform your practice. It's stuff that's going to help you inform your clients as well. So it's an important distinction. It's not just about all about sort of what the current thinking is. It's some of that, but it's also about a sort of a practical application of this. And I think that's really what we've always maintained as far as our ethos as the British Fascia Symposium is concerned.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. The Fascia Research Congress is excellent, and that's where I had the idea for the British Fascia Symposium. And I came back with it and I thought, what would really be great would be to have this for therapists, because I'm a body worker, that's my job. And I just thought, it needs to be, and Julian came up with the word when I talked to him about it, practice-led. And I thought, yeah, that's what it is, practice-led. And I thought, I'll just organise a small one, just for a few 75 people or something. And then I met Julian, and he said, I'll come and speak at it if you want me to. I said, oh, okay, great, lovely. And then he said, 10 minutes later, he said, oh, you could make it bigger and I could bring my bow and thread for this and I'll sponsor you. And that was it. And we booked it and 300 people turned up.
You begged me for money, Jan. That's how that worked.
It was great. It was great. And Julian's been behind it from the start. He's been brilliant. So, but yes, it's for therapists and it's designed by therapists and it's run by therapists. That's it. Because we I think you've got to, when you run an event, that you would like to be part of, that you'd like to go to. And I think the symposium is something that we'd like to go to. And that's why we
I really enjoyed being there, Jan, 2 years ago. And I think we were there for all of it. I went to Kelly Clancy's, one of her 10 Integrity Medicine workshops. That was fantastic. Yes. We filmed with Kelly and we filmed the Bio 10 Integrity pre-conference day. And I also met you before that at the One series that John Sharkey and Joanne Averson were doing in London. We've got all the filmed content for that. We're going to release probably later this year in conjunction with other amazing things that are going on with fascia. And for those of you that have joined us tonight, Jan and her team at the British Fascial Symposium are going to present a whole series of webinars where you'll get to speak to the panelists and bring your questions and ask questions about the BFS and what workshops and things will be going deeper into the different aspects that are shared. So this forms the first part of it, and we're going to leave it freely available. You can share it to your friends. You can share it across Facebook, invite your friends to come along and share more information about what the British Fascial Symposium is about. And tonight particularly, we wanted to address people who have a good understanding of fascia, but want, like Julian says, to have a practice-led lead through into how can this transform my practice for my clients. And Daniel, you're going to speak to us at the British Fascial Symposium and a taster tonight about you're considered an expert in tendons, and you teach people that there is no such thing as a specific thing called a tendon. Is that right?
Yes, I've certainly done a lot of research into tendons. As always, the more research you do, you realise that there's a lot of things that we don't know. So it's always questionable to call somebody an expert, but I've certainly hopefully got a lot of information that's helpful to people regarding tendon treatment. And yes, I think the idea that tendons don't exist in the world of fascia is a bit of an eye-catching title to get people's attention. And of course, tendons do exist, but what we're really exploring is this idea of continuity and this idea that whenever we're treating something, we shouldn't just focus on the structure and the the sort of biological cellular makeup of the structure. We need to focus on what is attached to that structure and what influences that structure in order to define just what the problem is and how we can treat it. And certainly fascia is very much about continuity and the transfer of forces, etc. So that's what the talk starts with, is looking at what a tendon is and how it relates to the neighboring structures, and just how how much flow there is between a tendon and the contractile tissue, and that it's not a case of one stops and the other one starts and they're just somewhat glued together. There's a structural flow through, there's a neurological connection, and then there's obviously the movement connection and how the tendon fits into that as well. So we'll be exploring that and looking at some key evidence-based treatment modalities for dealing with tendons at the presentation as well.
Brilliant. Julian, do you want to open with, we exchanged a few emails and you have some nice material, I believe, on the language of fascia and how, I guess, if we're going to work as multidisciplinary body workers and different therapists, we need to have a clear idea of what we're talking about when we palpate and work with the body and relating to fascia. Do you want to share, start and open tonight with something about that?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Jan about this last night. I was saying that, like Daniel's talked about, there being no such thing as a tendon. And in and of itself, he's absolutely right, that you can't have, it's like an iliotibial band. There is no such thing as an iliotibial band. It just doesn't exist. It's a construct. And in order to get an iliotibial band, you have to carve it out from the existing bit of tissue and leave something behind, throw 80% of what's there in the bin, and then call that an iliotibial band. So when you then start to see people foam rolling and, sorry, Dan, but you start to see people using rollers or doing stuff on this thing that you say here is a syndrome, you have to ask yourself, well, what is the question? What is the thing that we're working on? And it's a construct of the world of anatomy, much like any other famous bits of connective tissue that have been created. So I think we have to be very careful about taking a connective tissue or a piece of tissue sort of glorifying it and deifying it beyond anything else. There's nothing about fascia that is particularly remarkable in relation to it in and of itself. It requires other things around it in order for it to be functional, vice versa. So it's a very poorly described tissue. There's lots of bits of the body that haven't been named, and there's bits of fascia that haven't really got named either. They're sort of how things hang together. And there's even a lot of discussion and politics surrounding superficial fascia. I don't know if you've followed any of the dramas around that. It's a very geeky kind of term. But we still don't really know what it is, and there's still discussion and argument about how it's going to be defined. So when we start getting into the world of therapy, we start to talk about fascia release and fascial unwinding and putting pressure on things to release the fascia. As long as we understand that it's a narrative, it's a story that we tell, and that we aren't actually probably changing fascia underneath our hands at all during the session that we work on, then all well and good. And we can tell a story and we can understand the story, but fascia is one of four groups of connective tissue. It's a proper connective tissue. And then we have blood and we have bone and we have cartilage. And so those are the four groups of connective tissue. And then with each group, we've got lots of breakdowns. But actually how we affect the fascia is something which is not defined. It's not proven. It's not scienced. We still are in very, very early stages of what the effect of physical therapy is on fascia. When we feel things changing underneath our hands, we can be pretty sure it's not fascia that's changing underneath our hands. So then we have to ask the question, what is? What are we feeling when we feel those changes? Because something's changing. I've been putting my hands on people for 30 years, and So, and I feel changes on a regular basis. So, you know, is it fascia? Is it muscle? Is it ATP? Is it central nervous system? Is it peripheral? What, you know, what's going on? So these are the conversations I'm interested in having. And as a result, we sort of have to break down some of the claims and some of the ideas and some of the attachments that we have to the names of the therapies we have. And that's quite a painful conversation to have with many people. Mm-hmm. But I think it behoves us to have that conversation and to have the discussion, have an argument, have a debate. We don't do this very well, certainly in the Bowen world that I come from. Any discussion or debate is taken as the parents are arguing, and we're like, can't we all get along? And we have to have a good, strong scientific argument. And we have to be told we're wrong and disagree with people in order to move forward. And anybody who came to the Fascia Symposium, the first one that we had, will know that that was something that happened rigorously and was quite good fun. So for some people, so that is great. I love it. You know, we're still friends. We still love each other, but we need the debate, and we need to get a lot more scientific and a lot more real and practical about what it is that we are doing. Because I think it's gone on too long.
Julian, can I respond with a question to that myself?
Yes, of course.
So I studied at Westminster University with Leon Chaito and some structural integrators and osteopaths, Brian Isabel and Mark Gray, who was a structural integrator. And that was in 2001. So we were taught myofascial release, positional release, neuromuscular techniques and things. And when we were doing myofascial release, it was the terminology that you would meet the bind, and that there would be a creep and a release in the fascia, in the superficial fascia under the skin. So you've mentioned that was a hot topic recently. I would think John Wilkes, my co-director, would have been more aware of all that than myself. But now, in the understanding of myofascial release or what's happening under the skin, obviously you say there's a lack of science to describe what it is that we're feeling that's releasing. So those that might have joined tonight that might be massage therapists or sports massage therapists or any other type of body worker that's feeling that kind of release under their skin, it's almost, what you're saying is it's almost certainly not fascia because it responds far too slowly, but something else is happening. They are feeling something happening, obviously.
I'm saying it's probably not, and I think the evidence is poor to suggest that it is. The amount of pressure that we'd require to change any kind of fascia is unlikely to come from our hands. You know, mechanotransduction just ain't going to happen from our hands. Yeah. It's unlikely. So it is the question, what is happening? And there could be lots of answers. We could be having a hydrostatic influence. We could be changing the fluid. It could be erythemic. It could be cytokine responses. It could be loads of things. It could be just as simply, if you put your hand on somebody's shoulder that you see their shoulders are up and you go, breathe and relax, and they change that, then suddenly that muscle, that whatever it is you're touching, goes from feeling hard and tight to feeling soft. Robert's talked in recent books about interoception, which is a subject I'm very interested in, which is, for those of you that don't know interoception, it's a very, very light touch. Now, we're talking about a feather-light touch. We're talking about a paintbrush. A feather literally stroking the skin, the type of touch that you would apply to a child. Now, Robert hijacks this idea of interoception and says how important it is, and then links it to Rolfing. I don't think so. The type of pressure that we're talking about in terms of deep release is not going to be an interoceptive touch. So we're talking about going right back to skin and possibly the first area of superficial fascia, going to an insular cortex. That ain't coming anywhere near deep fascia or even probably any fascial continuity at all. We're probably talking about very, very much a response, a deep inner brain response. Now, we know that it follows a different nervous pathway to, say, proprioception. So it goes to slow, unmyelinated nerve endings. It goes very slowly. They're called tactile C fibers, and they found these through the University of Gothenburg. And it's a different area of the brain that this is going to. It's not going to go to the parietal sections that are going to deal with, you know, pressure, the Pacini and Ruffini corpuscles. It's going to go to a very deep area of the brain that's going to be associated with deep touch, also sexual touch as well. So we do need to be careful. But interoception is an interesting subject that we can go down. And it begs the question: how much pressure do we need to apply in order to have a therapeutic effect? Do we apply more pressure than we need to? I think. And do we do more work than we need to? And I would say probably, I think, you know, somebody comes in and we give them the certificate that's on our wall. As humans, we're geared to touch, and the touch that we're geared to is probably more likely to be a soft, gentle touch that we respond to. It feels good. You know, if you stroke somebody, oh, that feels lovely. Everybody feels that. That's our human response. We've commodified our touch, and we now need to go, well, now we're going to release your fascia. So that's the debate.
I definitely agree that I've, in my experience and talking to other practitioners, that, and the Kelly Clancy workshop was about doing less and not trying to fix other people. And I think the more that we can take on and collectively debate and share our experiences, scientists and body workers, I really would like to support the process of people coming out of that. I'm going to deliver my certificate training to these people and affect this fascia, and more so the relational. So I wonder to you, Julian, how, when you say that the sort of soft nurturing touch that for sure is more what we exchange on a human level relationally, and the relational importance of touch is highly backed up, how much do you feel the fascia plays in the sensing and the communication of relational soft touch? You've mentioned a lot of scientific.
In early years, it's vital. If you've ever looked at any of the Bundura studies with the monkeys and behavioral studies, it's pretty traumatic psychological stuff to look at. But essentially, the monkeys were given a cage that had milk and a toweling mother. They went to the cage to get the milk from it, and then they went back to the toweling mother, even though the toweling mother had no sense of giving them anything other than this soft touch. It's pretty scary stuff to look at. In early age of infants, prior to the age of seven, the insular cortex, this bit where this slow, unmyelinated touch goes to, which it triggers, goes to the pituitary, which then sends signals to the pituitary through the hypothalamus pituitary action to deliver and send signals out which via somatotrophins to the fibroblast to create more connective tissue. So the thing to remember is that, you know, in order for any growth or change to take place, whether that be repair or whether that be increase in flexibility or muscle growth, we need more connective tissue. You have to have a container. You know, there's a cup there, and the glass of water has to have a glass for it to be a glass of water. Otherwise, I've just got a puddle on the floor on the table. So the same thing goes as far as the body is concerned. We need a container. The container is our connective tissue or our bone or whatever it happens to be, and the contents then are dependent on, you know, what we put into that. But the human growth factor is massively driven at an early age by this power of touch. And there's lots of studies that show that children that don't get touched don't grow. It's called privation dwarfism. It's a very well documented phenomenon. So touch is linked to growth. Touch is linked to the power of healing. And the type of touch we're talking about, well, it's not rocket science. You know, the type of touch when somebody lies down and rubs you and it feels good, I don't think that's going to necessarily be any kind of less therapeutic or facial than being rolfed. And I have been rolfed twice and hellered once, maybe twice. So I've had a fair amount of deep tissue work done on me over my period. I'm only 21. That's what it is. So we just happen to intellectualize it and clarify it and commodify it, and that's the type of touch. And some people like it, some people like to get beaten up, you know, that's in any individual taste. I'm not saying one is better, one is worse. I'm just saying that probably the amount of touch that we actually need is probably less than we think we need, and from a therapeutic perspective, we could probably all stroke each other and feel a hell of a lot better,
which is a good argument for
stroking each other.
And for people knowing that massage and there are more easy to qualify yourself in therapies are highly needed in the world of therapeutics.
You're damn right. Absolutely.
A lot of people feel the pressure to up their skills into new modalities. But I think practitioners from whatever bodywork modality that you're in and that you enjoy and that you were drawn to, something like the BFS is enriching in a way that you don't need to retrain. If you're a shiatsu practitioner, you don't need to go and become an osteopath. We need all of these types of practitioners. I think osteopathy is wonderful. But if you're offering an experience and this kind of touch, which is highly nurturing, rather than trying to skill yourself up into this clever therapist that's fixing people based on maps and science that's always changing, you might
there's be... There's two elements, Julian. There's the therapeutic touch is contextual. If I go to you and you go, right, okay, we're going to, you know, I'm going to get my fists and my thumbs into here, and that's going to be therapeutic touch, and that's contextual for me, then that is therapeutic touch. It's mm-hmm. it's by dint of bestowing therapeutic touch on whatever you and I happen to agree on.
Yeah.
I'm not dismissing that in any way, shape or form, you know, and I've had some really good, powerful, strong work, which has been very, very profound. I had Tom Myers work with me a few years ago, and it was awesome. And he's got great hands, but there's not many people I would want to have touch me like that. What I'm saying is that from a fascial perspective,
yeah.
You know, when your hand's a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. Robert is a rolfer, and so it's going to come from that perspective. Leon's a deep tissue worker, so you know there is a role within the field of very light and soft tissue work to understand that it's probably going to have as profound effect on a deeper level as anything else. It's not one is better or different or worse than the other.
Definitely. So we've gone for about half an hour, Jan. Would you now feel to give us a run through of your symposium and where people are within it and who people might have heard of that they might be their heroes and they might want to come and meet them in person, and there might be some lesser known heroes that are going to be the next big thing, or somebody's going to be touched by what they have to say. So could you give us an overview of the symposium this May? It's the 12th and 13th of May. And the will it be the 11th? Is the pre-conference?
The pre-conference Friday. Day. Yeah, so there's the pre-conference day, which isn't organised by us. It's organised by John Sharkey of National Training Centre Ireland. And we had the first one 2 years ago, and it's running again this year. It was very popular last time. And we've got, they have got John Sharkey's obviously there, and Joanne Averson. Obviously, it's a Biot Integrity Day.
Yeah.
So everything is Biot Integrity. So we've got the wonderful Niall Galloway, who did an excellent talk last time on female pelvic and reconstructive surgery. And he's coming back again. And then Graham Scar, who does these amazing models demonstrating the force vectors in Biot Integrity. This is his book. There you go. And that's called The Structural Basis of Life. And he was here this afternoon having tea and cake with me. I love Graham. And we had a brilliant talk about how to develop models that actually showed how scars and adhesions affect the force vector and the distribution of force through the body. So that was fascinating. And he's just got an incredible mind. He'll be speaking. And there's Shari Berkowitz, who's talking about Biot Integrity in Pilates. And then Wilbur Kelsick, who's talking about athletics. We'll go on to Wilbur again in a minute. And then I'm doing my bit about scars and adhesions and how that affects the internal structure of the body. So that's the pre-conference day. I did send you a link, Julian. I don't know if you had that to put that up
on
screen for people, because that's not booked via the symposium. Okay, that's booked separately.
There we go. I've put it in the general chat for everyone. So that's where you register for the pre-conference day.
Yeah.
Organised by John Sharkey's organisation in Ireland, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's right. Yes. Yeah. So as we're with John, we'll carry on, because John is then doing quite a lot at the British Fascia Symposium. He's going to be a busy boy that weekend. I've got my crib notes here. He is doing a workshop on treating myofascial pelvic pain. And he's going to be doing that on the Sunday afternoon, because at the symposium, you get your main stage speakers, and then each afternoon you get a breakout session, and you can book yourself one hands-on workshop or movement workshop and one specialist lecture. So John's going to be doing the pelvic pain hands-on workshop, and he's a brilliant teacher, you know, he's got such a mind. And He also then on Saturday afternoon, he's doing a specialist lecture with Joanne Averson, and they're talking about fascia integrity. And that is really learning how connective tissue and the biotin integrity model makes sense of human movement. And that I'm going to be in that lecture, I have to say. I'm going to be in the audience. That fascinates me. I'm always fascinated by biotin integrity. So that's interesting. And so the main stage speakers, we've obviously got Robert Schleip, the wonderful Robert. He's such a lovely man. He supported us with Leon Chaitel by being our keynote speaker on the 2014. He's back again. And so he's going to be speaking on fascia as a sensory organ. And again, that is going to be a really interesting lecture, I think. And then, as Julian said, in the afternoon on Sunday, he's going to be doing a specialist lecture on interoception. So again, two really fascinating lectures. And then we've got Carol Davis. Carol Davis is Professor Emerita of the Department of Physical Therapy at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in Miami. Okay. And Carol's going to be talking about the role of mitochondria, fascia, and energy in pain. Now, we've got a pain webinar coming up, haven't we, Julian?
Yeah.
That's going to be on 13th of March, Tuesday the 13th of March. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Carol. She's too tied up for that one. But when we run through the webinars at the end, we'll go through that. We've got a couple of good speakers coming and more hopefully on their way. So, but Carol's lecture will be excellent, obviously. Daniel, of course, one of our main stage speakers. I'm looking forward to that. And he'll talk a bit more about that. Well, he's told you a bit of a teaser about his lecture, about the tendons that aren't tendons. And we've got Alison Harvey. Now, she's with the Barrel Institute, and she's trained in visceral manipulation. So she's going to be talking about the fascia of the abdominal cavity. Again, this is main stage. So you get to see all of these. This is all part of the symposium. You don't have to choose between these. And then we've got Till Lucow. Have I said that right? Till is going to be, he's coming over from the States, and he's speaking on cervicogenic and tension headaches. So he's going to be doing some myofascial techniques, talking about that. And then he's also running a workshop, but that's going to be an extension of the lecture, but not the same material. Okay, so you could do the two together. But Till's really quite a brilliant presenter. And then we've got the last but not least, we've got Wilbur Kelsick. Now, Wilbur, I mentioned he's on the pre-conference day speaking. He's an Olympic coach, again, very biotin integrity informed, and he's going to be running a workshop in one afternoon, Teach Me to Run. Now, he's an Olympics coach, so if you are a runner and you want your style improved, then Wilbur's the guy to talk to, and Wilbur's the guy to train with. So he's doing a two-hour running workshop. But on the main stage, he's going to be actually teaching about integrating alternative and complementary fascial therapies, creating the bridge, which I think is something we're all interested in. So that's the main stage speakers. I think one to watch, you've got Susan Findlay. Now, Susan's really leading the way with talking about massage and oncology, because, you know, I don't know about you, Julian, but when I was a massage therapist first trained, you never touched anybody with cancer. I don't know about you. I seem to remember that's,
that
I know.
That was the advice, yes.
Were you taught the same thing?
Yeah, we were, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Susan's really leading the way in this, taking the guesswork out of it and understanding more about when you can work and when you can't with people. We've got Jenny Burrell of Burrell Education. Now you might have seen her. She's all over social media. And she is an amazing woman, piles of energy. She makes me feel exhausted just watching her. And she is on a mission to help women. So anything to do with women, diastasis, pelvic problems, pelvic floor, cesareans, this is Jenny's bag. And she's teaching a workshop on holistic C-section recovery. So that's going to be good. Tracy Kiernan. Now, Tracy Kiernan's blend therapy training, and she is going to be teaching about TMJ therapy. And she's put together this course as an ex-dental nurse herself. So she's done it with a dentist's input, and a dentist's input. And she's talking about TMJ fascial release for the face and the jaw. Now, I've experienced this, so I'm going to recommend that one because I know it works. And again, incredibly light touch, incredibly light touch. And Julian, no, I don't know how it works, but it works. Okay.
I don't say we have to know how it works. I'm not, I'm not knowing how it works. I want to know how it works. That's why I cut dead people up. But, you know, I want to have a better understanding, but I'm not an advocate of saying, in fact, I've been teaching people for 25 years. And I think the more people don't try and work out how it works, the better. You know, they just do what they do and they work with their hands, and bring somebody that's a carpenter or a plumber or a bricklayer and he goes, I'm going to do this, and off they go. So it's when we get our brains get in the way that we have to start worrying.
I agree. Yeah.
True. And we lead the way, really, I think, as therapists. I always think if you wait for science to catch up and validate us before we do anything, then we won't get anything done. If it works, we go ahead and do it.
Well, yes, but I still think we have to avoid validating ourselves by talking unscientific nonsense, which is what we tend to have happen within our industry. We just make all these ridiculous claims that have no basis on science, and then we make stuff up. So that's why I have a problem with that.
No, absolutely, I agree. And I said, take it forward, and then let's hope that science will come along and validate it. You know,
science is a very blunt tool with which to dissect reality. And I think, you know, saying I don't know or the mechanism of action is unknown, I think is absolutely fine. And I don't have a problem with that. And 30 years ago, I'd have said, oh, we're doing this and this and this and this. And I'd have given you chapter on verse and what I think we're doing. And now I haven't got a bloody clue what I'm doing. I don't know
what you're doing.
So,
but you know it works.
Well, yeah, it does work. And I also have the freedom to say, I really don't understand fully the mechanism of action, but I do understand a lot more mechanisms of action. And I'm prepared to have the debate to say, why do we think we do what we do and what do we think is working?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And to call BS on when I think people are just making stuff up.
Yeah.
there's a bit of that, isn't there?
I guess, Julian, if people are making claims, you know, there's a big ego driver to say that we know what we're doing and why. But if we have humility in our practice and we say, like you say, that we don't know the mechanisms of it working, but we trust and we're on board with our clients and they are informed and they are as important, if not more important, in the treatment process. I think they are the experts of being themselves, not us with our maps, but we can still do great work. So those people that are making these claims, if we can help them reframe and go, hang on, I don't think we really know what's going on, but if it's working for you and you're not BSing all over the place your clients and telling them it's definitely this, so I think part of reframing, if people can go to the BFS and go, wow, so these top leading scientists that have invested the German government's millions in looking at fascia, and if Robert can say we're not sure and I don't understand 100% of what's said, then we should have some humility as therapists to say, neither do we, but this works for us and I'm willing to learn constantly.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is to put down, this is my theory. You know, this is what I did with Bowen 15 years ago, is to say, this is what I think we're doing. I don't know. I'm just putting something out there. But when you then have some kind of theory, then you can actually have an argument or a discussion or, well, I don't think it's this, I think it's this. And by scratching away at that, you then start to uncover what you do, what you know, what you don't know, what you need to understand more about, or whether you give a monkeys. You know, you might not go, well, I don't really care. But I think it comes down to the statement that I always say to people, you know, hold on to your practice dearly and hold on to your theory lightly. The theory is going to change. And every 2 years, you're going to have a different theory or a different book or a different idea of something that comes along, and it may be a passing fad, it may be something that gives us a little bit more insight. But science is a very blunt tool with which to set reality. We know that we put our hands on people and get changes. Hang on to that.
So thank you, Julian. I'd like to include Daniel a little more now. So you've been patiently sat quietly there. I've got some questions here that Jan and I would like to include you in on. So there was one here. How do you factor fascia in when treating common conditions in clinic? So I don't know what you would frame as a common condition, but aches and pains, back problems, stiff neck. Factoring in, Jan, would you say, would you ask Daniel how he frames it to his clients, or how Daniel sees it himself as fascia is implicated in these common conditions that we see in bodywork clinics every day?
Well, how Daniel sees it, yes.
Yeah.
From his point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's many things I can talk about. I think you mentioned lower back pain there. That's good. I see that a lot in clinic, as most people do. There was some interesting research recently where they found chronic back pain patients display less shear strain through their lumbar fascia, which is interesting research. And to me, that fits in with what I see in practice with people with ongoing lower back pain. And one of the main issues that they have is that they don't move their lower backs. They lock them up, the spasm.
Can you just briefly explain shear strain, please? I think a lot of people might not
follow
that. Thanks.
Yeah. So they measured in patients with chronic lower back pain that the lumbar fascia basically wasn't being stressed as much in those patients. And what that means in clinic is essentially those patients aren't moving their lower backs as much, and therefore the tissues around the lower back are not being moved and stressed and strained to the same capacity. So, you know, that's a problem that we have to overcome in practice. We have to try and encourage the movement. We have to try and educate the patients that we're trying to achieve that, and educate them about pain, what the pain might mean and what it doesn't mean. And also just to, you know, with hands-on work, to try and desensitize the tissue around that area in order to perhaps just get some small transient changes in their movement, which we can then try and build upon and capitalize on with ongoing home routines, etc. And then if the tissue gets moving more, then, you know, we can hope to improve the quality of the contractile tissue from that region, to reduce the patient's fear of movement, and also to try and promote the slide and glide of the tissue within the area and the surrounding tissues as well. So that's one particular thing. And there's no, you know, it's not a straightforward problem to solve. It involves hands-on work can be very beneficial, and you can get some quick changes within your session, and that can usually be a great boost for the patient, to show them that they can move, and that with simple interventions we can unwind their chronic issue. But there's also many other levels to it as well, including the education and the movement and the pain science. I'll just touch upon one other condition, and that's plantar fascia pain, plantar fasciopathies, plantar fasciitis, all the different terms it goes by. So for years with the plantar fascia foot pain, you know, we've been rubbing it or massaging it or giving people self-massage options using a golf ball or something similar. And people have been stretching it as well, and it hasn't really helped. It's, you know, it's dampened down the symptoms in some cases, but the plantar fascia issue has not really been remedied by that. But some interesting research came out a couple of years ago where they said, you know what, if the plantar fascia is painful and perhaps, you know, suffering from load or too much load or the wrong loading, then surely it makes sense to strengthen it. So if you strengthen the contractile tissue within the region, then you can hope that in doing so, you're taking the pressure off the passive structures, or you're providing more dynamic support and control around those passive structures as well. So by strengthening the foot and the neighboring tissues, by strengthening the intrinsic muscles, we can hope that we're putting less stress on the structure called the plantar fascia of the foot. So that's a couple of examples of how fascia fits into my practice, and how we're either working with fascia or trying to make changes that that support or even offload some of those specific structures. That's a couple of examples. Does that answer your question, Julian?
Yeah, it starts to create some interest in that area, I think. You had another thing, Jan, that we put here, which leads on from what you've just said, Daniel, about, is it important to consider fascia with strength and conditioning? So if people are having plantar fasciitis or some other diagnosis that implicates fascia, maybe other areas of the body with periosteal tear or periosteal pain points, you would engage a working knowledge of the fascia to strengthen the area to maybe offload the pain rather than having a treatment protocol to try and stretch it. I mean, John Sharkey talks about this, doesn't he, Jan? And he did in the One series about the idea of the anatomical and the physiological range and these stretching theories about stretching the fascia. Julian may want to comment on this as well, but the stretching of fascia, the amount that it can stretch is tiny, tiny, tiny. So if your idea is that you're stretching, Daniel, to release some pain in an area that's been, say it was a tendon, epicondylitis or something, and we can palpate that there are pain points around there, and they've been told that it's a fascial bone, periosteum running into the bone problem, and it's tender. Would you also, in other places of the body, look to, I'm just using this question here, implicate strengthening and conditioning the fascia rather than always looking to release?
Yeah, Julian earlier mentioned the iliotibial band, and I think that's a good place to talk around, because it's obviously a very common issue, lateral hip pain or lateral knee pain, especially with the marathon season coming up. People rolling in their ITB doesn't make sense. You know, the ITB is a thickening of the lateral intermuscular septum of the leg, between the vastus lateralis and the bicep femoris. So we've got to look at, firstly, what attaches to the iliotibial band. So up at the top, you've got the tensor fascia latae and the superior fibers of the glutes. They're contractile tissue. So if you're going to work on something which is going to influence iliotibial band issues, then it makes more sense to work on that contractile tissue, which we know we can influence much, much easier and much quicker. And also the vastus lateralis is said, when it contracts and expands, it's said to push out against the iliotibial band and to have an effect on the tension as well. So working on the tissues that attach to something, the contractile tissues that attach to something, makes sense. But if that tissue is still being stressed because other areas are not working hard enough, because deeper muscles perhaps are dysfunctional, then you're always going to have the same problem just perpetuating. So in the example of the hip, it's thought that if you work on the gluteus medius and minimus, which are considered the deeper stabilizers or the trochanteric stabilizers, then you put less stress on the iliotibial band and its connected structures if you strengthen the internal structures and therefore stabilize the hip more. A more stable hip is going to put less stress on that lateral band and essentially on that lateral fascia. So that's where the strengthening comes in, is not just the connected tissue, but the related tissue as well.
Can I just... And on so many levels, I agree with Daniel, but I wanted to give you another model, if this isn't too scary, that if we think of this as an iliotibial band, this sort of circle that we have as an iliotibial band, so one bit of it, as this circle, may be a bit thicker than the rest. So now let's extend that, and in the middle, let's put a bone. And then let's draw from the iliotibial band, from this circular structure, let's draw lines, and let's give it sort of 6 or 7 lines, and all those lines then come down to that bone in the middle, yeah? And the bone in the middle is our femur, and all those lines are the fascial components that formulate the bags of the muscle that we call the upper leg. Yeah, the upper body. Now go further up and you'll see vastus lateralis in there. Come further down, you won't see vastus lateralis in there. But essentially, every single component that's in those individual bags is wrapped in what we would call our fascia lata around the leg, if you want to call it that. And they're all coming down to attach the femur. So anything you do within that structure from a design perspective or a cookery perspective or from a metalwork project that you want to make, is going to have an effect on everything else. So the idea of isolating one structure and then naming that structure as having somehow more influence on that as anything else is quite reductionist. And I think this is where we end up with, is that we end up with a situation that we're quite happy to claim importance of one bit of tissue without understanding that it is a connective tissue, that it connects up all those other structures. And so when Daniel talks about stabilization, it's absolutely vital, because it's not just that bit has to then stabilize that bit, and that bit has to make sure that it's not more stable or less flexible than that bit. So that's kind of what I'm trying to get at. It's a never-ending circle. I think I've just disappeared up my own backside thinking about it, but that's kind of where we're at. That, you know, it's a spoke in a wheel.
Cool. And hence biotensegrity. So those that have come on today,
how do we get there?
We're going to have a webinar, aren't we, specifically on biotensegrity.
Oh no!
Now you've done it.
That was not where I was going with that, Julian. But
no.
Well
balancing
done.
Forces. Well done. But if we have a seven spoke structure that's dependent on the all other parts, and the tension and compression are vital, no? And that to me is biotensegrity, the explanation of how we're not a tensegrity structure, we're biotensegrity with as a continuity. Anyway, we can hear more from the
we need beer to do this.
So Daniel, is there anything else you want to share on these? Some of these questions are specific to some of your specialism on taping and your background in taping and kinesiology. Will they find out more about that in your presentation on the non-existent tendons at the BFS?
I won't be talking about taping at the BFS. There will be a taping stand there. But it's just my two kind of key areas of learning about fascia are from the kinesiology taping perspective with rock tape, and also from my research and writing on tendons and tendinopathy. So when I think about fascia, they're the kind of two areas that I was first introduced to it, and the two areas that I kind of follow that thread in more depth, I suppose. Is those two things.
So Jan, I'd like to take this opportunity in tonight's proceedings to share a link from Andrea, our friendly helper on the other side of the tech. We've got a link there, ehealthlearning.tv/livestream5. And there people can subscribe to find out more information about the whole series of webinars that you're helping us put together. And they will also get 10% off if they use the coupon code that's available on that page for booking the BFS. And I believe that discount is for the whole weekend ticket.
Yes.
It was for two tickets. Is it that one and another type?
You can either buy it on its own the weekend or combined with our buffet party evening on Saturday. But the code is just for the weekend.
Okay.
So you buy your weekends, you book all your workshops, and then you can buy your buffet party ticket separately at full price. Yeah.
Okay. And I think we have an explanation for that, Andrea, don't we, on that page as to... To apply the coupon to the weekend ticket, it will get you 10% off.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. So Daniel, which day are you? Are you doing your presentation?
The Saturday. Mm.
Okay. And Jan or Julian, do you have any other questions for Daniel?
I wonder if just there was a thing. Would you like to understand more about the link of fascist science with therapeutic practice?
Yeah.
And I think that. If you look at taping as an example, taping is probably the ultimate in terms of fascia science and what taping is going to be doing, because as long as you're getting your assessment right for your taping, then it's kind of what we have to do with fascia. We have to remind it on a regular basis through its postural change, through its loading. And I think what my version of my understanding of taping is, and I think Dan will agree that I think the approach has changed quite significantly. I heard him talk this year at whatever conference that we were at, and I was really thrilled to see the changes that have taken place. It was really interesting to see the evolution of of taping, that it's a constant reminder. It's a constant reminder to change the loading, to change the way that you're moving. And that's what's going to ultimately give you fascial change, is repetition and loading. It's and however you get around doing that, by either reducing or releasing pain with your hands, increasing movement by those effects, or taping to enforce and remind particularly functional postural movements, then I think that's the key. It's fascia is a responds long term, and it responds to long term repetitive input, and because it's asking cells to lay down more connective tissue, so you're effectively retraining yourself. I think that's what we have to think about, is fascial retraining, fascial realignment that's taking a long period of time. So I think taping is a really good impetus to that. And so that's what our role as therapists is to get people to a better functional space rather than necessarily releasing or changing their fascia within a 45-minute or 1-hour session.
Yeah, I agree, Julian. And also, and those 45-minute sessions give us the opportunity to show the potential change, whether we understand exactly why the tissue is being effective. But if we utilize I'm going to do a webinar soon on treatment cycle. For anybody, and if we keep the clients through a healthy treatment cycle where they're going with us on this journey and they realize the potential for change, then they will be motivated to maintain that change, whether it's with taping or movement practices outside of the session, because of course we need to retrain and remind the fascia on a long-term basis. And for us and those that are here tonight, whatever bodywork modality we do, we've covered tonight that it's extremely important. I think, Julian, that same study with the chimpanzees, the monkeys, didn't it also show that they went for the soft touch rather than the milk? I've heard that there's a study.
They went to get the milk, but they were there for seconds and they went straight back to the soft touch, you know.
Sure. So there's this element of relational touch bodywork, and I would love to see some fascial research that shows the intelligence of the fascia being involved in that. But we have the mechanisms by which we conduct our 45-minute sessions. And to me, the importance is to inspire, if we're going to do techniques that we're learning at places like the British Fascial Symposium or our modalities, that it give us and our clients the ability to focus and retrain the fascia, give structure and function a chance, and then create healthier habits. So
let's not also forget the importance of other connective tissues. When you're a woman over the age of 50, you know, your bone is probably a more important connective tissue to work on than your fascia is. Your bone density decreases rapidly. So, you know, getting over the age of a certain age, you'll probably want to move your connective tissue hierarchy up so that bone becomes more important than your fascia does. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be my argument. That again, let's not deify too much one particular connective tissue over another, because whenever you do that, there's four wheels on a car, much the same way there's four types of connective tissue, and that without one of them, the others aren't going to work effectively.
And they've shown with bone density, things like Tai Chi, Qigong, and micro traumas to lay down new stress.
You're walking up the stairs will do it.
Yeah.
Regularly.
Don't move into a bungalow.
It's loading it. It's loading it often, and it's regular, and it's impacting, you know. But you know.
Yeah. So we haven't had any questions in the Q&A. So we've still got 22 lovely public in here, practitioners mostly. Do you have any questions? We're 8 o'clock now. So any questions for Julian, Jan, or Daniel? On Facebook, I don't know. I'll flick over to there. I don't know if Andrea's caught any questions from Facebook that you could type into the Q&A, Andrea. And we'll leave this recording up on Facebook and we'll share it in our free recordings area on eHealth Learning. And I'll share to Julian and Daniel the Vimeo link so that they can share it through social media if they wish. And anyone else for that matter. So we've got no questions. This happens a lot of the time. We don't get questions. Sometimes later, we're going to open a forum soon. So long-term question answer sessions can be invited. So thank you everyone for attending tonight. Thank you, Julian Baker, Jan Trewother, and Daniel Lawrence. I'm not sure if I'm coming to the BFS. I should, shouldn't I? My God.
I should hope so, Julian.
Is that only for the party?
Uh-huh. Yes, if only for the party on Saturday night.
Well, I am over there the end of the month, so I could just come over a bit earlier. No problem.
Daniel's offered to buy everybody a drink.
Yeah. And Julian's leading the dance.
Just cut out there. My internet just cut out. Sorry.
You can have a drink, but he'll tape up our mouths so we can't actually drink them.
Yeah, the flying pigs are going to liberate. They'll be fine.
I've just got a couple of messages here. Let me see if we've got some questions. Okay. Yeah, we're good. She's answered a few questions that there were not ones to put to Julian or Daniel. So, yeah, Jan, do you want to just name the couple of the other dates? We've got one on pain and self-care. We're trying to firm up. We've got one on the pelvis and we've got one on biotensegrity. We're going to announce a number of dates and they'll be available on ehealthlearning.tv /upcoming webinars. You'll be able to find them on our website, on our Facebook page and on our community group. You can watch our live webinars in the community group on Facebook by just joining. It's free. And all the recordings go into our archive for the members. We've got over 115 webinars. Some with Joanne Averson on biotensegrity and the balance of forces. We've got Michel Audon, but I'm not talking about him. Jean-Claude Gumberto on fascia. And book launches are always free and available, and we've got a number of those on fascia. A recent one with David Lasundak, which was very good. So thank you for contributing to the fascial thread of this, Julian and Daniel. And Jan, when's our next date that we're back together?
Next one is Tuesday the 13th of March, and that's on pain.
Wonderful. So keep in the loop with these series, and we hope that some of you will utilize the coupon code and get some tickets for the British Fascial Symposium.
And please come and say hello at British Fascial Symposium, and it's all about the attendees asking questions, challenging. If there's something you don't, you know, you're not sure about, somebody's not explaining to you, challenge, ask questions, find out what, you know, it's a really interactive event. Really cross-disciplinary stuff, and I think it's going to be a very worthwhile event for all therapists. I think it will boost your practice coming to this event. It's a really important event for all hands-on therapists.
It is.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So with no further questions, you can post. If any of you want to revisit the video as the views go up and as comments and questions may come in, Dan and I may make a note of those, Daniel and Julian, and we'll see. They can come and ask them to you in person, perhaps at the BFS. But thank you for coming tonight, all of you, and we'll see you soon. We'll see you in a few weeks, Jan.
Thank you, Julian. See you soon.
Thanks for coming.
See you soon.
Thanks, Julian.
Bye now.
Thanks, Daniel.
Bye, Julian.
Bye, guys.
Bye now. Bye.
Welcome to eHealth Learning, inspiring professionals worldwide.